Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
This episode of Believe in South Carolina is brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to wager on all your favorite sports, contests, and events with first-to-market odds and lines. Find reviews and news for every league, including Major League Baseball, NFL, NBA, NHL, combat sports, esports, and even golf. BetOnline continues to be the top online resource for all your sports information, from live in-game betting, props, and futures. Head to BetOnline today or use your mobile device to join and make your first sports bet. Use our promo code BELIEVE to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, where the game starts. Now, time for Believe in South Carolina.
Michigan at the 41. What a hit! Ball's free! On the ground! South Carolina deserves to have it, and they do!
Welcome into another edition of Believe in South Carolina. As always, Nick Close joins us, and Gamecock legendary running back Marcus Lattimore. Marcus, Nick, how you guys doing today?
Doing good.
Doing well. Doing well. Big one this weekend.
Big one.
It is a big one. It is a big one. And, you know, that we know of, Tennessee didn't send any female employees to a playoff game last year to recruit any South Carolina high school players again. That we know of, allegedly. For those of you that have heard Marcus's story from his Burns days, you'll understand that one. But look, bottom line is
there's still a chance. Friday's not here yet.
It's not. Look, the bottom line is this. We know where South Carolina is right now, right? They're 6-4, coming off a very disappointing loss last week against Florida. And when you look at the schedule with Tennessee this week and then Clemson on the other side, obviously it doesn't get any easier. I mentioned it last night on GC Live Talking Tuesday nights that I don't have an issue talking about the offense, but I think we've got to a point now where if people want to say, okay, fire this guy, do that, it's not going to happen until the end of the regular season at the earliest, okay? So if people want to waste their time doing that, that's fine. I think the better question during this time period is, what the hell can they do differently? What can they do differently, right? If the OC is going to be here, the OC is going to be here. But what can they do differently? And again, talking about the matchup this week against Tennessee, 21-point underdogs, not a lot of people are going to give you a chance anyway. So what the hell do you have to lose by doing something different? And if you do something different, what should that look like?
The first thing that comes to mind for me, Mike, when I just think about the whole, it's how can we keep the team morale up to a level where they're competing every play? Like, that's the question that the coaching staff has to be asking themselves. How do we keep that team morale up? Because at this point, I mean, our offensive line is really, really struggling. And as we all know on this call, I mean, the game is won at the line of scrimmage. I mean, as much as we try to strategize and pick out certain players, certain skill players that are playing well or vice versa, they're not playing well. It goes back to the simplest explanation of why any team is successful. I mean, it's the line of scrimmage, man. We're really just getting pushed around. And we got to find a way to keep that team morale up and put our offensive line in a situation where they can be successful. What that looks like, man, I'm glad I'm not the offensive coordinator right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's college football. The highs are high and the lows are just so, so low. Because, I mean, you look back to when South Carolina beat Kentucky and then they beat Texas A&M. And we were like, oh, they have winnable games against Missouri and Vandy and possibly Florida. So you're really looking positive. And then, you know, you lose to Florida in a really bad game, and it's a lot of negativity, and I agree with Marcus of keeping that morale up. How are you going to make sure to do that? Because this, in my opinion, they've reverted back to what they did last season, where they couldn't string two good games together for the life of them. It would be one bad, one really good, right back at one bad. And honestly, I'd say to look on the optimistic side of things, well, you got two games left and you just played a really bad one. So that means one of these two last games is going to be good. And it's Tennessee and Clemson. So of all the weeks to have a good game, let's do it at home against Tennessee. So I'm liking the odds there, but they're doing what they did last year. You got to have good games back to back. You got to be able to build on momentum. And, you know, you just saw them come out so flat, and it's just been the same thing every week. So, I mean, obviously the O-line needs to tighten up. Not having Marshawn Lloyd, I think, has hurt us really bad. I mean, we didn't even have Beal Smith. Like, I mean, Juju McDowell is a good running back, but that hurts us. So, you know, some things I have to change, but I like the look of it. Two games left. You just had a really bad one. See if we can get a good one in the last two.
I'm going to mention this because Nick and Marcus already know, but I'm getting ready for Mr. Personality Bill Belichick to speak in a little bit. So I'm going to be dipping off the line in a little, and these two will finish up the show. So if I go MIA, that's what happened. I think it kidnapped. But Marcus, and I'm trying to remember if it crossed over, if you had an opportunity to play with Garrett Anderson, former Gamecock offensive lineman. He was on our Mixing a Water podcast earlier in the week. And
I know him very well, Mike. I just we didn't cross it. We crossed it.
Okay.
We called each other after just like a year apart.
That's what I thought. Just wanted to make sure though, because I bring that up because I know both of you guys had the opportunity to play for Spurrier. And one thing that he brought up, which I thought was interesting, is we're talking about, you know, what do you have to lose this week? Do something different. And one thing that he mentioned is letting the players call the plays. Now, I think as soon as people hear that, they think it's kind of like, okay, you know, it's backyard football. They're drawing plays in the dirt. No. What he means is kind of like with what Marshawn Lloyd said a couple weeks ago when he told Satterfield, hey, look, there's certain things out there from a matchup standpoint. Let's run the ball a little bit more. I bring that up because when you played for Spurrier, were there ever moments where it was you'd come off the sideline, whether it be you, whether it be Alshon, Torrey Gurley, whoever, and you guys saw certain things, and you relayed that back. I don't know, was it Mangus who was the OC at the time? Whether it be Mangus, whether it be Spurrier himself, and you guys had some freedom, if you will, about calling some plays. If that was the case, how does that process kind of go? And do you feel like this is the perfect time to roll the dice and do that against Tennessee?
I think that's the good sign of a coach. One that is able to receive information from his players and like process that information and take it and see, okay, what formation can I put them in to be able to call a play, you know? But, you know, yeah, I think that's a good sign of an offensive coordinator, of a head coach. We had a nice trio of coaches that collaborated together calling plays. G.A. Mangus obviously being the offensive coordinator, but obviously, I mean, Coach Spurrier was heavily involved in that. Coach Spurrier Jr. Was looking at the back end you know, seeing what coverages we're in, what would be good. Sean Elliott, I mean, golly, I mean, our run game was based off of his principles. So they had a nice relationship, and we had a good feel of the offense. And there were situations where, you know, and as a player, you have to separate your emotions from what you're actually seeing, like having a clear view of what you're seeing versus your emotions of I want the ball. Because, I mean, everybody's going to come off the sideline and say I was wide open or run this play here when your emotions are heightened. But there were many situations where teams were giving us the same look. Like they were giving us the same front. They were doing the same stunts on the defensive line, or they were playing the same coverage. And Alshon would absolutely go to the sideline because he knew the offense very well and say, hey, yeah, let's run a Mills, which is just like a deep post right here. Mm-hmm. Or Damir Bird coming off the sideline saying, yeah, let's utilize my speed right here. And there were plenty of situations where, you know, one in particular was the Navy game. It was we just ran a toss to the left, and the clock was running out, and I kind of signaled over the best look, like the best option for what they were showing us on the front on the defensive front. So, man, there were plenty of situations, but I mean, golly, that takes so much time. That takes confidence. That takes confidence in your players, confidence. Everybody's on the same page. And I mean, a little bit of momentum kind of carries that decision as well. But, you know, players making the decisions when things aren't going as well, I mean, I could see the benefit in it. You know, just a mix up, you know, maybe go at a different pace than we're usually going. If the offensive coordinator is comfortable with that, you know? So, I mean, it's a whole dance between players, head coach, offensive coordinator. But, not just leaving them out there and just giving them the whole playbook, giving them some set formations and some different options that they have. I think that could be beneficial, particularly this week. You know, you want to be in a lot of high percentage situations against this team, and golly, they can just score so quick that we got to keep the ball. We got to keep the ball away. I mean, Hooker, in my opinion, is he should be hoisting that trophy at the beginning of December. I mean,
certainly be in the mix.
He'll be in the mix
for sure.
But there's a kid named Drake May too. Crazy. Yeah, I wouldn't. I mean, obviously, didn't play SEC football, so I can't talk too much on the player side of that. But I would see how giving the whole, you know, the players just a playbook and saying, yeah, go out and call some plays probably wouldn't be the best idea. But at the same time, I sure hope they're taking in the players, you know, what they're seeing on the field. They're the guy, they're in the action. They're on the field. They see things that you're not going to see as a coach. Even though we got coaches up top, we got coaches on sidelines, you know, they're going to see things in a different way. They're up close and personal. They're the ones getting hit. They're the ones on the ground. So I sure hope that Satterfield is taking those things into consideration. I'm sure he is. Maybe we need to open that up a little more, like, you know, Marcus was kind of saying, and just really allow them to really have an influence in it. Not going to lie, I mean, the offense has been just frustrating to watch. It's been hard to watch. So I'll take any change at this point. It's the last couple of weeks. We kind of know after this season, Satterfield will most likely not be with the Gamecocks anymore, but who knows? He could be. So, you know, just I want just some improvement. Also, Tennessee got up by a lot early last year, and they weren't a college football playoff team. So that was also in Neyland. So who knows? Maybe the home in Willie B will help out.
I feel like we've mentioned this multiple times throughout the season. Simplify the playbook, simplify the playbook. I can't help but think back to what Jeff Saturday said after coaching the Colts this weekend. And one thing that he mentioned was how they had about like 14 plays. They trimmed the playbook down, and they just worked their tail off all week on like those 14 plays until they mastered it. You have to just do something this week to find some type of consistency. But more than anything, just trying to find a way to be able to build off of some of the things you're doing. I will say this, though, from a defensive standpoint, has the defense been fantastic the last couple weeks? No. And as Marcus mentioned before, because of how explosive Tennessee is, this could get really ugly. And the reason being is if the offense can't stay on the field, your defense is going to be absolutely gassed. You have to do everything you can to stay in the field. Because if your defense has been shaky the last couple of weeks to begin with, right, number one. But number two, if your offense can't stay in the field, and like we saw against Florida, you know, it's what they did at the beginning of the game, 14-play drive for the Gators, that is. 3-for-3 on third downs, there's no excuse for that. But the quick three and outs, not being able to stay on the field really hurt this defense last week. So if you're not able to get things going against Tennessee, boy, this defense is already thin as is, Marcus. I can't even imagine. And Tennessee wants to send a message because they're on the outside looking at the college football playoff. They have to. They have to come into Williams-Brice and not just beat you, but they have to send a message to that committee saying, hey, we're one of the best four teams in the country. We deserve a seat at the table, even if we don't go to the SEC championship game.
And you, I think the most concerning part is that they use the whole 52, 53 yards when with their, like, Tennessee's offense spreads you out, and they do it purposefully. I mean, that, like, that they're and they're moving at a very, very high pace. You know, they're one thing I've noticed about Tennessee is that they're well conditioned as an offense. You know, they're able to get in and out of the huddle, line back up real fast, like it's part of their standard operation. It's a part of the, it's like probably one of the core tenets of the philosophy of the offense is for them to use all 52 and a half yards of that field, spread you out, bring you in, find lanes, line up real quick. Man, then they have some slippery receivers, man. They're just, you know, one being from Columbia, you know, how he escaped Columbia. I don't know.
That blew my mind. I had no idea Jalin Hyatt was from Irmo. Are you kidding? That was the Muschamp
Dutch
era,
fork
right?
At that.
That was quick Muschamp story. Era?
Yeah.
Quick story about Jalin Hyatt, because we're getting ready for the press conference. You can hear the people in here. State championship game goes to overtime. And as we know, Muschamp and that coaching staff did not offer Hyatt. Jeremy Pruitt is on the sideline, on the visiting sideline of the state championship game, right? Jeremy Pruitt is closest to the student section, right? The visiting sideline over there. Hyatt scores the game-winning touchdown the opposite end. In that very end zone, on that same sideline, as he walks back with the game-winning touchdown, ball in his hand, there's another coach on the sideline, and that coach was Will Muschamp. So, again, obviously, as Beamer even mentioned yesterday, that coaching staff is not here. They did not offer Hyatt. But, yeah, he definitely got away. And as we've seen right now, right up there with probably, what, Marvin Harrison Jr., he's the best receiver in the country. And you have to know where he is at all times on the field, because he's the type of guy that his football IQ, I call it landmark routes. Marcus probably knows what I'm talking about, those landmark routes. He's good at running his routes, but what he's really good at is finding open space, especially when Hooker's on the move. So you need to do everything, everything to be able to find ways to just know where he is. Kind of like what DeMarcus was saying before with Alshon. Alshon just had such a high football IQ. He just knew how to get open. Hyatt knows how to get open. Obviously, two different skill sets, but he's very talented if you don't pay attention to him because he will get open.
I can't believe that just that happened. Like that kid.
The name of the show is mind-boggled. Oh my gosh.
He didn't get offered by South Carolina or Clemson. I mean, so now we got a kid who's one of the best receivers in the country, not just coming into Willie B, but coming into Willie B with like a vendetta, a chip on his shoulder.
Grew up going to Carolina games. Well, I mean, he probably had different aspirations when he got to high school because, you know, there's teams all over the country that you see on Saturday. But, I mean, he probably wanted to be a Gamecock, you know, like, so it's just like, I don't know, man. It's things like that we can't do in the future. And I think that's what Coach Beamer. I mean, Coach Beamer understands that you have – he says it in every press conference. You have to keep the best talent.
Yeah.
Instead.
And I don't think if Beamer was here in that time, I don't think he escaped South Carolina. I'm going to be honest. Beamer is so – this is our state. We are getting the best players in this state. I don't think he leaves this state if Beamer's here. I think that was a different era. So it's definitely not a hit on, you know, like, oh, why don't we have this guy? It's honestly, it's just crazy. Like, just looking back on it, like, how is he at Tennessee right now? And he's one of the best players in the country. But that's the way things go. So we'll get really familiar with him. Mike had to help hop off. Belichick just walked in the room. So, but we'll keep it going. But yeah, this offense, I mean, 47.4 points per game, which is crazy. Ridiculous. And then you just look at like Hendon Hooker putting up Heisman. He's already got 2,888 yards this year. Hyatt's got 1,116 receiving yards. So this is just a high-powered offense. And what I've noticed throughout this season, we were talking a little defense before, and I agree that the offense not being able to get off the field hurts a lot. I mean, our defense is gassed. They're tired. They have to be on the field so much. It hurts them a lot. But when we come out flat a lot, we get run in that first, usually that first drive. They run all over us. And when I say run, I mean literally run. We can't stop the run very well. But one thing is they're very good at second half adjustments. That's what I've noticed pretty much all year. You get through the first half and it's kind of like, what is this defense? Second half, okay, the defense is playing well now. They always adjust well to the offense at the second half. But, you know, against Tennessee, you're going to need more. We're probably going to need to see, you know, some of those special teams, some of that special teams magic come into play. We're going to have to force Hendon Hooker to turn the ball over. And if you can get a crazy play on special teams, a defensive touchdown, you know, you're probably going to have a chance against Tennessee, but you're going to have to make those things happen.
It's going to take a perfect game, Nick. Mm-hmm. And when I say perfect, not necessarily mistake-free, but turnover-free.
Close.
And a few three and outs. Like, I mean, it's going to take a monumental effort to be in this game. But, you know, I know Darius Rush and Cam Smith got to be excited about this, you know, about this opportunity that they have to showcase who they are, because we have some talent in the back end of our defense. And those guys are just they're football players. And I think it's a good challenge for them, but also like just a I mean, just a really opportunity to showcase that on a national stage. Like, I mean, that's got to be exciting for them. I'm betting on that at least. Yeah. And one thing is so crucial is that at this point, it's looking like Jaheim Bell's gonna stay at running back. So we have to find a way to like just give him a little space.
Yeah.
Because he can get you four yards when you give him a crease. You know, he didn't really have a lot of opportunity last week to showcase his quickness in between the holes. You know, there was some situations, you know, where he got out in space and there was, you know, a couple runs where, you know, you see that he is an effective runner of the football. Like, he's not a tight end. He's not a receiver. He's not a quarterback. He's not a running back. He's just a guy. You put the ball in his hands and something will happen. But we just got to open up a lane for him to give him that opportunity to show that, like, because he can be, if he needs to be a running back, which is somebody that can effectively move the chains, like, he can do that. He has that capability, but finding a crease, opening up a crease. And it might have been Mike who said this a little bit earlier. I'm with simplifying this thing as much as possible.
Oh, yeah. That was Mike, yeah.
Like, finding a way to, like, just make this thing effective. Like just give us a situation where the guys can be effective. You know, a situation, I'm speaking of the offensive coordinator, like, put us in situations where things aren't complicated, because I don't know. It's still Willie B. It's a night game.
It's also SEC Nation's going to be in Columbia. It's a night game. It's on ESPN. And it's also a lot of these seniors, it's their last game at Willie B.
Mm.
Which is, like, Cam Smith already said, like, this is most likely going to be my last game at Willie B. So what you just said about, you know, Cam Smith and Rush, it's even more so because, yes, they want to do something on a national stage, and this is the stage to do it. But also, talk about a way to go out.
Man.
How do you want to go out?
That's an added detail that I missed. I mean, yeah, that definitely makes a difference. I mean, particularly for him. I mean, he's from Columbia, so heck, he played against Jalen Hyatt.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, I mean, it's almost as if, like, this is the tape that the scouts are going to turn on, you know, once the season ends. Like, you can almost envision, like, okay, what did he do against one of the best receivers?
This is gonna affect his draft stock, like, 100%. This is what's gonna be like: is can he play at the next level, or how high of a prospect is he really? I'm sure he's gonna play at the next level, but this is it. Like, he's gonna guard Hyatt. It's one of the most the best offensive teams in the country. They're gonna look at this, and a lot of these players, if they want a chance of getting signed or, you know, being a pick in the draft, this is going to mean a lot. But also, it's just going to mean a lot to the team, to the city, if they can pull something off. But like we said, it's gonna have to be really close to a perfect game if they want to win. And that's just how good Tennessee is. Also, you know, they haven't been playing the best. I totally agree with simplifying playbook. I mean, I've even seen it. We've seen it work in the NFL. Like we said with Jeff Saturday, I'm also a Broncos fan. So a few weeks ago, I remember I was watching the Broncos. Obviously, they're not having a great season. But I was watching them, and they simplified their playbook. And once they did that, Russ was able to actually move the ball, and they were doing really well at moving the ball. They still are awful at in the red zone, so that doesn't help. But simplifying the playbook can work, and I think it would be a smart move for them, just because there's obviously problems. And I know we're talking about Tennessee now, but just to kind of go back to the Florida game to talk to Marcus about that game. Just as fans, oh my gosh, how frustrating. How frustrating to go into that. I know it's the swamp, and you've played in the swamp. So I all respect there to how tough that environment is to play in. But 38-6 wasn't what I expected.
Not at all. Particularly given the fact that, you know, Florida hasn't been that impressive. Now, don't get me wrong. Florida, because the talent is so rich in the state, they will always, no matter if what their record looks like, they will always have a championship level of talent on their team. Now, like, make no mistake by that. Two more years of Anthony Richardson, and heck, you get him molded and sculpted up. I mean, he'll be one of the best quarterbacks in the country. There's no doubt about that. ETN at running back, that defensive line has always been dominant. It doesn't matter what year you go to. Ever since the inception of football at Florida, they've been dominant. You know, so I mean, it's just like Florida is going to be Florida. However, they're building a new culture with a new coach. It was surprising to see us not necessarily get out physical. Like, I feel like they have more talent, you know, if I'm just looking across the board, but, you know, for us not to be able to, like, move it, like, do anything. Like, we couldn't do anything.
No.
That was shocking.
I didn't expect that to be that flat, especially after we had that. Because, like, you have that one game, you know, it happens. Unless you're a championship undefeated team, there's at least one game where you just don't play well, most likely. Yeah. Just the odds are there. I thought that was Missouri. I thought Missouri was a game we 100% should have won. We came in flat at home and just blew it. And, you know, it was a bad game. It was a bad game, and they happened. I just was expecting, you know, after that experience, they would, you know, learn from that. And so now you see Florida, and they want to come out and, you know, play hard and win that game. And I'm not saying they're not playing hard or anything. I know this team, that's one of the best things about them, is they always go 110%. But just to be that flat after that's already happened, you know, it just was such a deflating thing. You know, you really noticed it on social media after everyone, you know, questioning. Obviously, the Fire Satterfield stuff got even more, but questioning Beamer, his statements in press conferences and stuff like that. So, you know, it just wasn't great. But like I said, we have a tendency to win games and then drop them, which means we just had a bad game. So now we're going into Tennessee looking for a good game. And hopefully that can happen. We definitely need to see the O-line, like Marcus has talked about. The O-line's got to improve just from week. And we've seen them play solid. There's not – this O-line, Marcus, definitely isn't like a lost cause. We've seen them play pretty good. We've seen Marshawn Lloyd run for over 100 yards and multiple touchdowns.
Yeah. It's happened. And that's the only thing – that needs to happen on Saturday. You know, like if there's one thing at the top of my list, it's for them to congeal, come back again, play as a unit, move people off the ball. Like, just if we can do that, I mean, that keeps us in the game. And heck, I know that nobody goes out there again wanting to make a mistake, or, you know, it's not their plan to be in a situation where they're on their heels. But I mean, this is why you came to South Carolina to play against the best, you know, to play against the best in the country. And you got that opportunity on Saturday, you know, to showcase who you are. And I think, more than anything, this game, regardless if we win or lose, you know, how we play, like the level of play, that it kind of will show, it will be the telltale story of our season, because, you know, it's been up, it's been down, it's been up, it's been down. Can we, is this the mark of Coach Beamer's, of Coach Beamer teams? Like, are we able to bounce back?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, that, can we do it again? Can we bounce back again? That's the mark of teams that have, you know, continued success as the program develops. Like, mm-hmm. if you're able to bounce back after losses, if you're able mm-hmm. to keep going, keep in there, like, you don't get down, you don't get frustrated, because that, like, it's not a lost cause. Like, the sink, mm-hmm. the ship hasn't sunk. Can we bounce back? That, and I think, Nick, I mean, from what I've seen, from the energy that I feel from the team, you know, like, just psychologically, it feels like we become more motivated when people are talking shit and we are, our backs are against the wall.
Yeah, I'd agree with that, because when we were singing the praises and they were ranked 25, that obviously didn't work. So the motivation factor, I think it works way better on this team when they, you know, they lose, they drop. Everyone's like, this team sucked. Because like I said, after Florida, after Missouri, it got pretty bleak. But after Florida, and Mike's actually back with us, joined again. After Florida, you saw on Twitter, Mike definitely saw, just the negativity. It immediately goes to this season's lost cause. And a big reason for that is we're 6-4 and we have Tennessee and Clemson to finish the year. So people are like, why? Like, who cares about the last two games? We're 6-6. And by the way, these last two games also matter, because the season over for the Gamecocks was 6.5. If they win, they get the over. If they lose, they don't. So these matter.
All right, Al Michaels Jr. over here, letting everyone know that there's something on the line here still. From a gambling standpoint. And what are you talking about, Nick? It's always sunshine and rainbow, especially over at Gamecock Central on the message board.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's no such thing as negativity. Our subscribers, they're always happy. It's always a beautiful day, unlike the weather right here in Foxborough, Massachusetts, where it's just absolutely gross, and that's why I'm underneath this little tunnel. But one thing I did want to ask Marcus, because I've been connecting dots over the last couple weeks, and again, this isn't to say that we agree with it, but we try to make sense of things. That's what I always say. We try to make sense, Marcus. Over the last couple of weeks, we've seen Jaheim Bell play more running back, right? We started at the beginning of the year, but we've seen it over the last couple of weeks. And I know there's a lot of people that are frustrated. And I say people, I'm talking about people on the outside, some fans, the Mosters, because you have some other talented running backs, right? Christian Beal-Smith was banged up. Okay, so you have Juju. We know what Juju's able to do, and that's not to say that he can't be a guy that gets more carries, but maybe they don't view him as a true number one. Okay, you have Rashad Ames. You have some other guys on that list. But I kept going back to something that Beamer mentioned to the media, that is. And I kept thinking about something that you said months ago about playing the running back position. Beamer mentioned that the job that Bell has done from a blocking standpoint at running back, picking up angles, and just how difficult that is alone, but playing receiver, playing tight end, and then being able to do that, that's not easy. That should not be overlooked. And I kept thinking about something you said back in the spring when trying to find ways to separate yourself from the rest of the pack at running back. And one thing that you brought up is if you want to stay on the field as a running back, if you can prove that you can block consistently, it's going to be difficult. And I'm paraphrasing. It's going to be difficult for them to take you off the field. Could that be the reason why we're seeing Bell out there at running back maybe a little bit more? Because, again, I'm trying to connect dots here. When Beamer says that he's been very pleased with the job that Bell has done from a blocking standpoint, is that maybe one of the reasons why we're seeing him? I'm not saying that's what they should be doing to use him, but to try to make sense for people on the outside, because I think they see it and it's just like, oh, they're trying to get him the ball. They are, but we also see him plenty of times where he's back there and he's blocking and he's not getting the ball. And some fans get upset because they're saying, why aren't they getting him the ball? Well, maybe they feel like he's one of the better blockers they have at running back when Christian Beal-Smith is out, when Marshawn Lloyd's out.
No, Mike. I think Coach Beamer's a chess player. You know, I mean, it's a good excuse to validate his decision on putting Bell at running back. I bet Coach Beamer is really good at chess. I'll say this. I see it as a trust thing. They trust him to protect the ball. I see it as he may be the most effective runner out of the group, given they have Rashad Amos, given they have Juju. You know, there was a run against Florida where he was in between the tackles and you saw the fluidity in his hips, you saw his footwork, you saw that he moves his feet on contact. That's when he had a crease. When he has a crease, he can get you 4 yards. A small crease, he can get you 4 to 5 yards consistently simply because he's moving his feet and his feet are so quick to be that big. You just don't see guys like Derrick Henry has amazing speed. Like, you get him in open field, there's nobody catching Derrick Henry, but in between the tackles, his feet aren't as effective as Jaheim Bell. And I'm using that parallel because they kind of, because of their stature, Derrick Henry, Jaheim Bell, they remind me of each other. But Nick and I were just talking about he's not a receiver, running back, quarterback. He's whatever you need him to be because he loves football. But there's been situations where I've seen Jaheim Bell, because he's a football player and he understands the whole concept of blocking and the pass. The route combinations and the run game, because he understands that, yeah, he's going to be a great blocker, but I don't think that's the reason he's at running back at all, because he's a good blocker. I think just because he can get you 4.5 yards when you need 4.5 yards, and he has pretty good vision, in my opinion. Coach Beamer, he's slick, man.
And I bring that up, and Nick, I want you to weigh in on this because I'm setting it up, okay? Because this has been something we've seen a lot on Gamecock Central. I've seen on social media the last couple of days. I bring that up, Marcus and Nick, because Rashad took to Twitter the other day. It was on the 13th. Hope tweeted a fan. I'm assuming it was a fan. And, they said, Amos has been here for years, and we insist on playing a tight end at running back. I've been thinking about that since the game started. I love Bell and all, but it's kind of a slap in the face to the running backs that have been here. And he quote tweeted that, which we've seen some interactions on social media from players before, family members as well this season. And all he wrote was, imagine, dot, dot. So I bring that up because, Nick, Marcus, is this something that we have to worry about in that running back room in particular, right? You could say any position, but for the sake of the conversation, is this something that we should be worried about? I mean, we know about the transfer portal. We understand things are growing with that. And look, it's every school is going to have a guy transfer out once in a while, even the schools that are playing, that are going 12-0 in the regular season. You know, guys are going to feel like they deserve more points. I understand that. But is this something that we should worry about at South Carolina? And if you are a running back in that room and you're seeing Bell out there, are you taking that upon yourself as, okay, hey, I got to do a better job? Or is that more of a slap in your face?
Do you want to go first, Marcus? I'd rather you go first.
I want to comment on players tweeting at fans. It's just this simple. That's corrosive to a culture. Players interacting with fans, expressing their emotions for the world to see, for their teammates to see, for the coaches to see. It's not the way to handle how you feel. If you're a lot more emotionally mature, which I wasn't at that age, so I can't talk, but you go to the coach, you ask, what can I do? But also, this is a team game. And, you know, that's the thing I despise about social media, is because it's given this entitlement it gives this entitlement to people, to just people. And it can infect the locker room so quickly, because everybody saw that. Everybody on the team saw that. And now there's this looming frustration that's like swirling in the building, and it's just not good. You just got to find a different way to handle that. I understand this frustration. Yeah. I mean, you came there to play running back. You should be frustrated. You should be pissed off. But at the end of the day, who's the better option at running back? And that's not a slap to him. That's just the reality of the situation. In my Coach Hardesty, Coach Beamer thinks that Bell is the best decision. That has to be addressed. That has to be addressed as soon as possible. You know, and you know, Bell did the same thing. You know, I mean, that's, you know, you put your when you once you put your voice out there.
And I'll say this, Marcus, just to cut you off, to make sure we're all on the same page. Bell has been pretty good about social media this year. I mean, I may have missed something, so Nick, cut me off, Marcus. I know his mother put some stuff out. Family members have expressed. If there is something that Jaheim put out, I may have missed it. I just want to make sure that we're clarifying that it's been more so Bell's family than anything else, but it's an extension of. Right? Girlfriends, family. I mean, I'm not in the same ballpark, but my loved ones, I've had to tell them, hey, look, there's going to be morons that will say stuff about me. Marcus, I'm sure you've had to deal with this. And you have to give them like a talk. Do not respond back. Please do not respond back, because anything you say, I'm going to have to deal with it.
You're attached to it.
Yeah. And Jaheim, I mean, he said something in a press conference, but it wasn't even bad. It was just like, yeah, I'm frustrated. Like he expressed his emotions, but he did it in a good way. And I agree with the Twitter thing. That's just not a smart thing. But like we said, everyone, you know, players are young and social media, growing up in this age of social media.
It's a challenge, Nick.
It is.
And I get it. And so, you know, I retract. If I said something that Bell, you know, that was probably just me assuming that he said something. So yeah, that's probably not true, but I mean, just social media in general.
It's
a big distraction.
If I had the choice, I wish I didn't grow up in a time where social media was so relevant. It's just, it can corrode a culture when you're talking sports. I mean, it just gives people a platform to say dumb things sometimes. And so I think that's a problem right there. But at the same time, I'm glad I agree with Marcus. Who's the best option? Raleigh Jaheim Bell. Like, I'm sorry to say it, but I mean, if Lloyd was still there, if Beal Smith was still healthy right now, what's the difference? I mean, they'd be playing. Bell is the best option at running back. And yes, as a competitor, you should be annoyed. You should be doing everything you can to get on that field. And that is frustrating too, because, you know, like we've talked about a lot, coaches make decisions. And, you know, if the coaches want to run Jaheim Bell, that's what they're going to do. So that's just a frustrating situation overall. I think I agree with Marcus. You handle that the mature way to handle that. And you learn that. So I learned it, you know, in high school, but you learn it at different times. And that's just going to a coach or your boss or whatever it may be. And you man-to-man or man-to-woman, one-on-one, you have that conversation. And I think that's just the better way to deal with that. But I just think Jaheim Bell is the best option at running back, and that's why he's playing. So it's a cut and dry reason, in my opinion.
It's no secret that in the media, our job is to, obviously follow the team. And when you follow the team, stuff that appears on social media is part of it. It's not even necessarily the media members. You know, there's certain stuff that we'll see. It's just like, it's not even worth, you know, running a story on, right? Like, I saw that. It's like, all right, he's just frustrated. Something to keep an eye on. But it's the other ham and eggers out there, whether it be in the fan base, whether it be, you know, whoever, right, that will make those things a bigger deal than they are. Just like we saw with the Find Some Joy and how that kind of blew up into something where it's like Beamer really had to go out there and explain that, like, he's not taking a shot at the fan base. Like, that's yeah, the kind of stuff that I'm talking about. There's going to be people that are going to run with stuff. And as someone that uses social media so much for work, and it's probably the dumbest award that I've won is the best local tweeter, I can only imagine how much more of my life I could have accomplished if I wasn't on this freaking app.
You're a pro.
But that's the point being is, even I am just like, man, if I was just away from Twitter, maybe I would actually learn a new language or learn how to play the piano. You know, I don't freaking know. But no, I bring all that up because I think the challenging part, and Marcus brought it up, and Nick, you said it's like a lot of these kids, they come here and some of them understand the spotlight that they're going to be in, but I think a lot of them don't understand. I think a lot of them don't. Like, everything you do is under a magnifying glass. Like, this is South Carolina's pro team. And I can confidently say that now from being up in a pro market. It's just like, that is their pro team. So everything you do is going to be magnified times 100. And when things are going rough, it's going to be even bigger. And I think the challenging part is, it's like, you know, covering the Patriots, a lot of those guys, Kevin Harris has kind of talked to me about it before. It's like, you know, you got to be careful with what you say and do around here. And I think you learn that from the veteran guys. He understands that, but he's in his 20s. When you're coming in 17, 18, 19 years old, sometimes we're not going to, you know that, but it's kind of like you learn.
Yeah.
As time goes on, you know?
Well, Mike, I was going to say, the thing is, when a lot of these young kids get there, sometimes you think of a tweet and it's like, that's not that bad. Like, oh, that would be something I could say. I can tweet. It's expressing myself. But it's not the tweet always that was like the bad thing. Like, you didn't say a bad thing or anything like that. It's the people who are going to add on to it, because you are under the spotlight, and they don't really fully realize
that's
that.
The issue.
And
you
then
give them oxygen.
It blows up.
Yes.
And all of a sudden,
you give
a little tweet they thought of that was harmless and totally, you know, may have been, maybe they shouldn't have said it, but it wasn't overall bad, is now blown up because everyone saw it, and now the fans are getting involved and they have opinions in there, and it's quote tweeted everywhere, and you're just like, whoa. And
like
that's just how Twitter.
A tiny flame that like just like just starts
Bingo.
To spread. And then it spreads into your team, and then it spreads into your coaches, and then it spreads into the fan base. And it's like, man,
and then eventually there's not one person in Columbia who probably hasn't seen it.
Right.
It's all over.
That's the thing. But you know, it's you learn from it. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's probably seen like the power that he possesses now. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, it could have, you can use that power. You can use that power for a lot of different, you know, like Mike does. I mean, you use that power for a force that is good and it's not divisive.
Sometimes.
You know,
sometimes we try to do good sometimes.
You know, but you know, it's like once that division starts to happen, it's, I mean, golly, it's,
and that's the difference. It's like, it's not even about how many followers you have when you're on a platform. Because Marcus, I mean, I think back to an interview you and I did almost 5 years ago. It's crazy to think this, when we were sitting in your living room when you announced that you were going back to work at USC, about making sure that you use football and you don't let football use you, because they're on this platform now where it doesn't matter if they have, you know, 1,000 followers or whatever, because you are an extension of the team, you have more eyeballs on you than you really realize at any given time. Bringing it back now to football and finishing this thing off, guys, just final thoughts on this game. Again, we know how difficult it's going to be over these next 2 weeks, but you're playing Tennessee, a team that isn't going to give you anything, because they're trying to send a message this week. What is your just final thoughts, knowing that not a lot of people are going to give them an opportunity to or a shot in their mind to be able to win this game? You are a heavy underdog, and a lot of people think this game is going to be a blowout.
Yeah, I mean, I'll start it off really quick, but me and Marcus talked about it. This game has to be near perfect, going to have to cause a turnover. Got to get an interception, throw Hooker off his game, and probably a crazy play on special teams again. That, I mean, they do those all the time, apparently. But, you know, you're going to need to see that too. And then we also, Marcus and I also talked about, this is Cam Smith's last game in Willie B. There's a lot of other players who it could be their last
game
in Willie B.
Making me feel old. Like I was covering him at Westwood just yesterday.
It's their last game at Willie B. So that's a powerful thing. That's a huge impact. And so, yeah, they're going to have to use that and bounce back from a bad game against Florida. But, you know, no one's expecting them to win. So why not go out and shock everyone? So, yeah, they just got to play. They got to play a near perfect game.
Agreed, Nick. Give Bell some creases. Find a way to give Jaheim Bell, Juju McDowell some creases. And be the team that you've been all season, bouncing back. When adversity hits, I bounce back. When adversity hits, like, just keep coming back. Like, that's been the story of Coach Beamer's team this season. They've been able to regroup, not sink, but rise to the occasion when it after disappointment, they always rise back up. No matter how long it takes, they always rise back up. That's my take for this week, Mike. I mean, it's gotta find a way to give him a crease so he can get 4 to 5 yards.
My take is the offense needs to find a way to stay on the field. It's not just about scoring and keeping up, but it's being able to stay in the field to help out your defense. One last thing I want to add, though, before we wrap things up today, thoughts and prayers out to the Virginia football program. Yes. Three lives that were lost. Another player that's in critical condition. But I also want to extend our thoughts and prayers to the Woodland High School community here in South Carolina with the loss of Lavelle Davis Jr.
Yes.
I'm sure we have some Gamecock fans in that community. Obviously, extension to all those involved, but especially here in our own backyard, where I'm sure there's some Gamecock fans at Woodland High School. So just want to let you guys know that we're thinking about you and praying for you. And I think we'll leave it at that note. Nick, Marcus, appreciate you guys. Enjoy the game this Saturday night. Enjoy it. Last game, William Bryce this season. Believe it or not, already done. Just like that. Appreciate you guys listening to Believe in South Carolina. We'll do it again next week.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.